Welcome to We're Always Watching, the official Illuminati movie podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about Firestarter. A young girl tries to understand how she mysteriously gained powers to set things on fire with her mind. I am your host, Joe Deckelmeyer from the Illuminati, alongside my colleagues and my best buds, Josh Goldman, who is runs our Twitch. He also is on our Star Trek show called The Riker Maneuver. How you doing, Josh?
I am good.
And Jezzer Ray is my co-host, my buddy. We do the Ranger wrap-up together. How you doing, Jezzer?
I'm doing good.
So, first thing first, this is a remake of the, I will say, classic Stephen King original film, Firestarter.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a classic. Like, that came out shortly after E.T. and was like Drew Barrymore. Like, obviously, she comes from, like, Hollywood royalty or whatever, but this was, like, one of her first big things.
One of the things that we found maybe a little bit we didn't know, a little shocked us a little bit, but that original Firestarter cast was stacked with talent.
Yeah, so, like, I know I asked you this earlier, Joe, but Jezzer, I don't remember if I asked you this before we actually started rolling. When is the last time that you actually saw the original movie?
I want to say it was like 4 or 5 years ago at best. I do remember watching. So Halloween, one thing I like to do is I like to watch one horror movie every day in October. And I think 5 years ago or so, a Firestarter happened to be, and they also used to do, I don't know if anybody remembers this or anyone, if they still do it, but AMC or TMC would also air, yeah, around Halloween, their, these horror movies, and Firestarter happened to be one of them I caught. And, that was the last time I saw it. It was like 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was AMC.
Yeah, I mean, that's
TCM,
that's
one of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Jezzer, what about you?
You want to know something crazy is, I saw the original, like maybe 15 years ago, but the one that I always like remember as Firestarter was, I think it was the sequel or something. It was like,
yeah, Firestarter 2002.
Yeah, Rekindled with the girl from Mighty Ducks. And I remember that one more than I do the Drew Barrymore one. So
at the time, Jezzer, did you know that that was a sequel?
No, I just remember Firestarter, and I just like, oh, that's a girl from Mighty Ducks, you know? That's,
I only remember that movie was a thing because of the second Carrie movie.
You know what? And it's funny that you bring up Carrie, because there's so many elements that I think that are drawn from Carrie in this, and it's almost like a through line.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about with the movie, because like
this movie,
with this movie.
Well, hold it there for a second, but because before we get into that, we're gonna talk about this movie in depth. So this is your spoiler warning. Now, this movie is out and it's streaming currently on Peacock. So if you do want to check out that movie, stop this podcast right here and go and watch it. But if you're along for the ride and you didn't watch this movie, like a lot of other people that we know didn't, just listen on through. But this is your spoiler warning right here. All right, guys, now let's talk about it, Firestarter. Josh, before I cut you off, chat me up.
So I don't remember the original movie at all. Like, all I remember and know about it is that Drew Barrymore is a little girl who has the power to set things on fire.
Honestly, that's
all I knew going into this most, new one.
That's most of what I remember, too. I do remember there being like a, I don't know if it was an insane hospital scene with her like burning it down. Like, I have these memories of the film. And I can easily picture it, but I can't necessarily recall beat by beat the plot points.
Yeah, I don't remember it being like a, like they're like superhero type people.
I don't think it was. were the parents in the original?
You would assume we would have done the homework for this, but here's the thing. They didn't provide the screener, so I'm going to be very transparent about this one. So we did not do the homework, and to tell you the honest to God truth, guys, let's be real about this. This is what you call a filler episode, mainly because the new release this week happened to be Firestarter. So on that, a lot of us didn't get a chance to revisit the original. Yeah.
But honestly, being transparent, like I was kind of looking forward to this movie. like just hearing about it, like,
well, yeah, no, for sure. And I don't want to sound coming off like, oh, we didn't get a screener, but the truth is, it's a Blumhouse film.
Yeah,
that exactly. Thinking a Stephen King property, so and I see there's a premise then,
like Zac Efron being cast in it. First, I was like, I feel fucking old as shit now because Zac Efron is old enough to have a 13-year-old daughter or 10-year-old girl or what or however old she was.
Hey, you want to talk about a fun experience we had about Zac Efron?
Okay.
Josh and I used to do a podcast called The Price of Admission. I strongly recommend going back and watch those classic episodes because or listening to those classic episodes because that is really a precursor of what we're doing currently right now. But go back and find an episode. What was the movie?
Oh. We were just talking about this movie too.
That awkward moment.
Go back and listen to that awkward moments episode because the most awkward of moments came as two men at the time in their 30s went to go watch Zac Efron, mind you, at the height of the sexy Zac Efron that everybody knows, watching this movie together. So I think that most I would assume this. That most people thought we were a couple watching a Zac Efron movie.
Yeah. I don't remember. Was Jessica on that episode with us?
Jessica was on that episode with us and watched the movie. She did watch the movie with us.
Oh, that's right. But she had to sit like way back, didn't she?
Yeah, she did not sit with us because I think we arrived late because we were in like the front row.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
So we arrived
late. I can't remember if that was one that she missed or if that was one where she went to another theater because she lived in a different part of town than we did.
That was definitely one that she was at and yeah, it was definitely that awkward moment.
Yeah.
But it was honestly a fun movie. I'm not gonna lie. Go back and watch that great movie, great cast. But back to Firestarter.
Yeah. So sorry. So what I was saying was all that stuff was making me look forward to it. But I just couldn't remember the original. So I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna watch it so I can go into this one viewing it as someone else who maybe hadn't seen the original and this was going to be their first experience with it because, you know, that's always the good way to watch a remake because sometimes they're not that great.
So did you going and when did you know about this movie's development? Like when, what caught your interest? Was it because it was Blumhouse or because it was a remake of this classic?
A little bit of both. Like I think I saw the press release that we had gotten saying, hey, Blumhouse just announced that they're, you know, that one of their projects is Firestarter, or maybe it was like one of the interviews that we had or something. Somehow I saw like the news about it. I was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. So like, you know, I wasn't like going around telling everyone, man, I'm super excited for this movie. It was
low key. You had dry.
Yeah, low key. It was like, oh, I'm going to pay attention to this one.
Jennifer, were you aware at all of the remake of Firestarter?
No.
Blumhouse one?
No. So the way I found out about it was I was doing my, you know, maybe 18th rewatch of The Office on Peacock and they had a trailer. So, you know, Peacock working really hard to push their original content. So,
hey, did that interest you? But did the trailer at least look good enough to catch your interest?
This is okay. I'm going to be totally freaking honest and I'm really pissed off about this. This is the closest thing we'll ever get to have Zac Efron and fire. You know, like everybody always talks about how Zac Efron should be the next Johnny Storm. This is the clear indication now that he has aged out of that role. And he's a dad now in this movie. And
that's what I was saying earlier.
And
that makes me feel fucking.
Wait a minute. I don't think he's aged out of the Johnny Storm role.
I think in the MCU's world of Johnny Storm, they're going to be looking at a younger actor now. Like he by the time this movie like gets off the ground, they're going to want a younger actor to carry on the Fantastic Four franchise. You know,
I don't know, because like if they're going with John Krasinski. Sorry, spoiler alert.
And by the way, if you haven't seen Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, go download episode one of We're Always Watching, where we do a deep dive of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
Yeah. But if that's who they're going with, you know, he's an older dude. So Susan Storm is probably going to be a little bit on the.
So Zac Efron is 35.
Yeah. So he could totally be like John Krasinski's girlfriend's younger brother.
Maybe. Susan Storm. This is the closest thing that we're ever going to get to seeing like Zac Efron anywhere near Susan. Fire.
Yeah, no. It's interesting. That's an interesting thing. So let me ask you this, Jezzer. It's so funny that how Firestarter sparks these geek conversations. But I guess this is why we do a podcast.
I've got another one when you're done.
But my question is, just as we got John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, would you say the obvious choice for Johnny Storm has been unanimously Zac Efron?
It's been a split. Between Zac Efron and why am I blanking? Dacre Montgomery.
Montgomery. It's another
like,
good choice.
Even fans that don't know Dacre Montgomery from Power Rangers, Stranger Things, they're like, oh, that guy could be, you know.
Can I throw a wild card in that list? I'm going to throw a young one at you. KJ Apa from Riverdale.
KJ Apa. I mean, he isn't busy. I mean, they announced that Wonder Twins thing and then they canceled it right away. So
KJ Apa, I'm telling you. Or here's a fun one too. And this is actually more along the lines of Jezzer's point, but I think it works. If you here, I really like this casting. If you don't get Emily Blunt as Sue, I like Ali Wong, and I actually think Ludi Lin would be a fantastic Johnny.
Maybe.
Yeah. I can see that.
Just putting it out there, guys. Just putting it out there.
I mean, his Ludi Lin's version of Zach was kind of along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
And look, I think Ali Wong is on the rise. Like, I think that it's only a matter of time until she is in one of these type of movies.
Yeah. So my question is also off of that same original thing that Jesse said. So you just said that you're on your like your 18th rewatch of The Office. Are there any other shows that like you've rewatched that many times, or is that like the show that you're just like, I need to put something on in the background. I'm going to turn that on.
Don't you think The Office is the natural go-to? For me, it's the go-to.
No, I have a few. So
okay.
It's The Office, Big Bang Theory sometimes, Malcolm in the Middle, and Entourage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
A weird assortment of shows.
It's hard that I do episodic things, but if I do, The Office has to be probably up there one of them. We talk about just putting something on and forgetting.
Wrestling,
like there's so much wrestling content that comes on.
Not just throw something on and forgetting, but specific shows that are in like your like
The Office. Well, The Office, Jezzer knows this. Smallville, if it was on it, that'd probably be one of them. Jezzer knows I'm a big Roswell guy.
Well, not even just Roswell. Like on, but like, you know, like you purposely go to Netflix or Amazon. And you're like,
I would say those shows, 90210 sometimes. The Challenge on MTV. Like I literally will
Do you watch them like straight through from beginning to end, or do you just throw on random?
It all depends, because I think that, look, in all honesty, we talk about these streaming services, Firestarters on Peacock. One thing I absolutely love and I'm a big advocate of is Pluto TV.
Because you can just kind of like scroll through channels like you used to.
Well, not just scrolling through channels, but you can scroll through curated shows and whatever episode comes on. I could you know, watch whatever random episode comes on. I do like that about Pluto TV. Tubi is another one I really like. But yeah.
Because like for me, like because I'm a sci-fi, you know, fanatic or whatever.
Has a great Star Trek channel there.
Yeah. So my go-to are usually like Stargate SG-1, Atlantis, Warehouse 13, Eureka, and some Star Trek series, whether it's a Deep Space Nine seems to be the one that I rewatch the most, but then I'll also like pull like another show from like the early 2000s or like the late 90s that like I remember watching when it was on, but never went back to. So now I'm going through Earth Final Conflict, which is another Gene Roddenberry show.
You know, for all of you guys that tuned in for a Firestarter review.
You're right.
I want to say sorry, but we're just going to have to go with it.
Yeah, but we can jump back to that, because we were talking about like the people who were cast in Firestarter.
Yeah.
Like Zac Efron being one of the things. But then, I know, Jezzer, you and I were saying that we had the same reaction. Kurtwood Smith. Yeah. Who played Red on That 70s Show. He was also the first bad guy that RoboCop went up against in the original RoboCop.
Yep. John Beasley, who plays the same role in every freaking movie.
Let's run this down real quick. So this film, Firestarter, is directed by Keith Thomas. It's written by the writers are Stephen King, based on the novel by Stephen King and Scott Teams. Stars Zac Efron, Ryan Kira Armstrong, Sidney Lemon, along with Kurtwood Smith, as my colleagues here just said. Michael Gray Eyes, Gloria Rubin, Josh Beasley, Tina Jung, Hannah Yannis, list goes on.
Now you got all the major players, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and new up and coming, the girl that played Charlie Ryan Armstrong is like, I think she's really good. I think
she was really good. Like, I don't know her from anything else, though.
She was in that Tomorrow War with Chris. What's his name?
Chris Pratt. She was his younger daughter. Right?
Talking about Ryan Kira Armstrong.
Yeah.
And I said, let's talk about this. I mean, let's dive in. I mean, if we're talking about some of the positive and the takeaways, is Ryan Kira Armstrong.
Yeah.
Really strong in the role. I think, look, here's the thing. this is a little bit harder, I feel. I don't think people are going to compare the two, but I mean, Drew Barrymore was a breakout star. I mean, obviously through E.T., but Firestarter really put her on the map. Question for you guys. Ryan Kira Armstrong, does this movie put her on the map?
They gave her a different age in this one. So, like, she was at an age where it was easier for her to understand some of the concepts and, like, kind of deliver the types of things that they wanted for her. For, like, you could see with this actress, you could see, like, the her inner turmoil and, like, trying to figure out what's good and what's bad and what where the morality line is, versus where Drew Barrymore in the original film, it was more so just her having a fit, you know?
Right.
And there's nothing against Drew Barrymore at that age. It's just that's what they're, you know, it was just easier for them to do that for her, her being at such an age.
You know, oddly enough, I feel like Firestarter lends itself well to a remake. And it's really all about the execution at that point. Josh, I have a question for you if you can remember the original pulling back some, I don't know, almost 30 years later, in terms of the way that this is shot, what did you think? What did you think about the direction we had from Keith Thomas?
So interestingly enough, when I was, I actually watched this last night, and during it, I'm like, this music sounds really familiar.
Right.
Like, because throughout the whole thing, I was like, this feels like an 80s horror movie, from the direction, from the way the character spoke, just the cinematography and everything came together. I felt like I was watching like like something that I would visualize the original Firestarter was, or like Child's Play, or like Friday the 13th, any of those. Like this had that, like the pacing was very similar to those, and just everything about it just reminded me of that. And the music was John Carpenter.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So I looked that up before we started here, because I was like, oh, I wanted to look up who did that. I was like, because when I was talking with Shay about it when I was watching it, I was like, this sounds like Tubular Bells and like that whole, that, you know, that Friday the 13th era and all that kind of stuff. And that's exactly why it was, because John Carpenter did the music for it.
You know what? And that's let's talk about some of the positive notes as well. And something that goes overlooked a lot during these podcasts, we never really talk about scores and music and things. And this happens to have a decent score.
Yeah.
Another thing too, like, I think that, look, do you think this movie hinges on the performance of Zac Efron, or do you think that Zac Efron is believable as Andy McGee in this role?
I would say yes. I thought he was good. I feel like the script probably could have been a little bit better. But I think that's part of what made me feel like it was one of those like early 80s horror movies, because like you watch any of those, the dialogue is always like not bad. Great. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Honestly, for me, I feel like I didn't believe Zac Efron as her dad. Like, he just felt very like stepdad. Like, I don't care about this kid because it's not my kid type thing. Like, he was very detached from the young actress, and I think that maybe that's why I didn't like it as much. Like, you really felt like he didn't, just the way he was doing it, like he didn't care, you know?
Yeah, I honestly though, I think that was a purposeful choice.
Like, you think like, so? You think that he was like pushing her away because she had the powers?
I think it came down. Well, so before we talk about that, let's talk about like how this all actually started. Because the movie starts off, from what I understand, completely differently than the original one does. Because I don't remember her parents really being involved in that one. And in this one, it's sort of like what happened on The Boys. The government was testing, you know, different drugs, and they got this test group. They gave them whatever this chemical was, and it gave Zac Efron the power to push thoughts into people's heads. And his wife got telekinesis. Mm-hmm. Their daughter
has both a little bit,
also has the pyrokinesis, and also can read people's minds, apparently. Like, apparently she has all the powers that we saw people have in the movie.
I think you just described Jean Grey.
Yeah,
she's Dark Phoenix.
More or less, she's Dark Phoenix. I don't know. I think it was entertaining, and I liked it, but it just didn't come across as like
it felt different. No. Like, it felt different than the original. The original is more of like, oh, she's like you know, she's one of a kind and she's special. But here, like you said, it's kind of like an old CW like TV show. It reminds me of like the Tomorrow People or, you know, stuff like that, where, you know, there's an agency that's trying to get them. A little bit of like Roswell, like Roswell. It's just like a group of supernatural people, and there's an agency that wants to control them, versus like the original, where it's like, oh, she's a fire starter.
Do you think the marketing is off in this movie then? Because I feel like it's marketed more as a horror movie.
Yeah.
And not necessarily like the more of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Slash superhero kind of thing.
Yeah. Like it's weird because like it has that feeling of like all of that put into one, which is why I said I think that contributes to why it felt like,
let me ask you,
earlier movies.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think that this fire, like the original Firestarter, is marketed as a horror movie and comes off as a horror movie? What's the tone of this? Because is it a sci-fi movie to you? Is this more of like a superhero genre? Is this a horror movie?
I'm getting sci-fi. Do you guys remember the old, not the old, but the movie with Chris Evans and like, was it Dakota Fanning? Push?
Push. Yeah.
Yeah. This feels like a horror version of Push.
Yeah. I can kind of see that.
Actually, I completely agree. Because you have all the different people with different powers. Like in this one, you had the Native American guy that had the ability to read people's thoughts.
Yeah,
Jezzer, we should just do a new segment with you because you do this fun thing, which I never put these two movies together. But then he'll be like, "This movie's like this movie." He did it with the Green Lantern and Doctor Strange, I believe. And like, I feel like this would be a fun little segment for Jezzer to compare. Sir, like, I would have never compared Firestarter to Push. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But the direction of the story is absolutely there.
They're coming after them, right?
Hamlet.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Like whenever I'm watching these movies, like this feels like another movie. You know?
Yeah. No, I'm with you there a lot too. Because like in the recent episode of Strange New Worlds, the new Star Trek series, there was the thing of the week responded to music, so they had to use music to try and connect with it. I was like, this is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because that was the whole thing in that. So it happens.
Speaking of music, I do want to go over some of the trivia that we found on IMDb about this version of Firestarter. Josh, you're right. John Carpenter, who did the music for this film, was set to direct the original Firestarter in 1984, but he was replaced when his previous film The Thing failed at the box office. He would instead direct another Stephen King adaptation, Christine, 1983.
That's interesting because originally Akiva Goldsman was supposed to direct this version.
We will get there. So, let's go there now. Akiva Goldsmith and Faith Atkins were set to direct this film. We do know that Akiva Goldsmith is a producer on this film, though.
Goldsman.
Sorry, did I say Goldsmith?
Yeah.
Sorry, I apologize. The final film for executive producer Martha De Laurentiis, who died on December 4th, 2021. Her first film as a producer was the original Firestarter in 1984. She would later go on to produce several other Stephen King adaptations with her husband, Dino De Laurentiis. And Ryan Kira Armstrong previously appeared in It Chapter 2, another Stephen King adaptation.
That's nice. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's probably where I got her.
That kind of like follow certain films.
I really like that. I really hope that she does appear in more Stephen King
adaptations. Yeah, well, like I could see, like kind of like Jezra was saying earlier, like I can see her becoming like the next like Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh yeah,
or someone like that. In
you know, like I can see her in like following the same path as what was that girl? She was in Transformers and she was in Sicario and she was in Dora the Explorer. I feel Isabella Moner or something.
Yeah, Isabella Moner. Yeah, she's in that movie with Mark Wahlberg.
I can see her having that type of role. Like she chooses those roles. Like she won't choose like those comedy films. She'll be really choosy of what she
from Logan. Daphne Keene.
She's another
one. Cause like she's currently in The Dark Materials on HBO.
And I get
that kind of a vibe off of her too.
So now that we know what you guys did like about the film, I mean, we got to talk about what we didn't like. Josh, what are some of the things that weren't quite a highlight for you in this?
Like I was saying before, like the dialogue felt very much like an 80s horror movie dialogue. It's not bad, but I feel like filmmaking has evolved a bit since then. So it just felt very superficial. I think it's where we were kind of talking about this with like the Multiverse of Madness too. Like it felt like, okay, all this is happening is because it's in the script. So it just felt very flat.
Right.
Yeah.
Jezzer, how about you?
The plot, the story, I guess, like it was just felt very like, it's funny to say, it's like, it felt like overdone. Yeah. It's a remake of the original, but yeah, it felt like overdone, like from other movies. So like the stakes weren't, you didn't really feel the stakes. You kind of, it was a little predictable. There's a scene where like the Captain Hollister, like, you know, says, oh, you can't do this because then you'll do this. It's like, of course she's going to do this. Like you already established, like, you know, where her line is, where Charlie's line is. So yeah, like the plot, it was very predictable. A lot of things were very predictable. There are some characters that they added in there that it's like the aim for you to like really care about, like, the other guy with the powers, Rainbird.
Yeah.
It feels like they wanted you to like feel like the push and pull between like what he's thinking and like, oh, I'm working for this organization, but I also want to, you know, protect my kind. Like, but yeah, because his face was so like, just kind of like blah, like you didn't really care. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Cause this movie feels very anticlimactic.
Yeah. I think predictable.
Predictable is
the word I was looking for. Like not necessarily because like, you know, there's some movies that are predictable but are good because like, you know, you know the thing that's going to happen, but then you don't necessarily know how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh man, I knew that was going to happen, but you know, I didn't see whatever. But with this one, like the thing at the end with him pushing with him pushing her to have so that she would burn the entire building down. Yeah. That was foreshadowed in the beginning when he was, you know, going off to on his wife about how he would never do that to her.
Yeah.
Like when that was happening, I was like, this is how the movie's going to end. He's going to have to push her to do something.
It's weird because it kind of plays out like this father and daughter on the run, kind of like we were just talking about Logan earlier.
Yeah.
Not nearly as well executed.
Yep.
It just feels like you're right. It feels predictable by where it goes.
It never goes anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very by the numbers. It's a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a movie.
One thing that they probably didn't touch on it here, but they were explaining how like Zac Efron's character, like the more times that he used his ability, the more taxing it was on his body. But like from what they showed in the film, like I felt like he wasn't using it as much as his daughter was using it, and so you weren't really seeing like how it was affecting her. It was just easy for her. Like you'd think that there'd be some kind of like she'd be struggling a little bit by trying, you know, constantly like burning down this building, you know, but
that's why the assassin guy that they had hired, or the bounty hunter, whatever you want to call him, he was carrying her out at the end.
Because she was,
I guess, worn out.
Yeah. Because like at this rate, she should be dead, you know?
Yeah, but that also depends on how it works in her, I guess, because they did that. It's one of the things that they did make sure that they covered was, yeah, they mentioned that they didn't know how using her power is going to affect her, unlike her dad, who was suffering from his eyes bleeding and having those microhemorrhages.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. Like, did they talk about like her also having abilities of her mom and dad? Like, or she just did it?
Like, so you saw like when they were stopped, when they stopped the car at the place where she burned the cat for the first time, you see her trying to use her powers, and instead of setting something on fire, she knocks like some kind of a piece of metal off of the thing. So they don't, you know, necessarily talk about her having those abilities, but they show you.
But how about her pushing people's pushing people to do things?
That one they had, and they had just indicated that she had the telekinesis. So yeah. I think at that moment where she takes off. Where she runs into those kids on the bike and she pushes them to give her their
clothes. That was the moment.
Take the bike. That she was like, oh, wait, I think I can do this.
Yeah. See, that stuff I would love to see more of her, like her honing her skills and like,
yeah.
Cause they did like a little montage or whatever in the forest, but more of that. And you know, like this movie clocked in at like an hour and 34 minutes. Like it had some wiggle room to add things like that, but it feels like they just like cut so many corners.
Speaking of cutting corners, Did the effects to you guys feel a little bit dated? Like, granted, I appreciate practical effects.
Yeah.
But did it not come? Did it not look great to anybody?
I mean, it didn't look bad.
It was CW.
Yes.
I've seen better like
episode of Arrow.
Flame throwing by like freaking Robbie and Mel, you know, like right.
I think that again, I think that ties into why for me it just felt like a standard 80s horror movie.
Yeah.
Not specifically like one like Firestarter, but just like your average generic film.
Yeah, but the question there is, does that work in 2022?
For people like me, yes.
Okay.
Because like one of the reasons I liked the Batman was because it felt like an old school noir movie. Where I know like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, the pacing was, it wasn't great pace and it was 3 hours long. And I was like, yeah, it was 3 hours long, but what would you have actually cut? Like, which moments would you have taken out? And not a lot of people can be like, oh, well, I might have cut this shorter. I would have cut this shorter.
Yeah. It honestly, for me, it feels like a made for TV movie in like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this question.
Exactly.
Let me ask you guys this question. Like, there's been a huge trend for like all these major streaming services of like having it just go straight to their streaming platforms. But like potentially could be, you know, seen in cinemas. Like, so is there a point in time, like from when they're producing the film, making the film and about to release it, that they decide, oh, well, we're having a bunch of people watch it. And then if the reception isn't good, we'll just put it on the streaming service. So it's not that like, you know, like the stakes are lower.
You know, I think that this is a hard movie because I feel that like, yes, Zac Efron is a draw. And I think that Zac Efron would do just fine, maybe at a box office, but I don't know if he would do great in a box office in this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. He's been doing a lot of streaming stuff like recently though, too. Cause like he did that Ted Bundy.
Yeah. But do you think that this movie, to maybe what Jezzer's trying to say a little bit, do you think that this movie didn't end up directly in theaters because of the way it tested?
Maybe.
We don't know the inside baseball on that.
Yeah. Cause like, I don't know when they finished making this. So it's possible that it was still while the streaming companies were negotiating for, you know, like COVID,
you know, what's type stuff. It's interesting because I actually think this may have played better as a television series.
Because
I feel that like with the hour and a half that it's given, it does feel like a made for TV movie. But if you're able to flesh out some of these characters a little bit more and some of the relationships a little bit more, and honestly, maybe parts of the shop a little bit more. Like Kurtwood Smith's character.
Well, I mean, just going off the TV show route, that's simple. You make it like the original Incredible Hulk TV show with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno.
On the run.
Where they're on the run. They go from town to town. Something happens in each town. They have to move on to the next one.
Yeah, I definitely think this may have served better as a television show rather than trying to pack it in.
It would have been a canceled TV show, but
let's pitch it.
I mean, look, I think that sometimes audiences, and us included as fans, we get kind of we have jaded. Not jaded, but we definitely have these nostalgia glasses we put on, and we think now that it's 2022, maybe this thing that was a thing in like the 80s is going to be a thing again. And I think that it's the Stranger Things effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now here we are in 2022 and we got Firestarter, which was a classic by all means. And this not so much does not land as a classic. This does not feel like it carries on a legacy. Whereas I feel like the original It, yes, it has, is a cult classic, but this current It, that Warner Brothers recently made stands up.
Yeah,
well, it holds up.
I didn't like the second one as much. I think once they introduced like the aliens aspect of it, then I was like, thrown off by it.
I agree. I don't disagree. But I would say like box office wise, too, it's pretty successful to the point where I can easily see them making a Pennywise prequel. You know what I mean?
We were talking about the Price of Admission podcast earlier. Do you remember when we did the remake of Carrie?
I do.
So
this feels like that.
Yeah, so it feels like that, but like the thing that I didn't like about the new Carrie was that the problem was cell phones. If they didn't show people using their cell phones in the movie, it would have been fine. And that's where this new one kind of failed. Wait, because
am I not mistaken that this movie kind of starts? This is in 2000. This movie starts off in 2008.
Yeah.
Was that dude? Was one of the characters? Were they using a VHS fucking tape in this movie though?
That's what it looked like.
All right,
but it was also like a government thing. So
bizarre. You would think the government would have like a flash drive in 2008 or something.
Yeah, you would think.
Okay, let's do what we do on this podcast. This is our second episode of doing this, by the way. We are sorry this is late. Like we said, we watch this just like everybody else did. So here we are. Jezzer, why don't we start with you? How many fireballs are you giving this movie?
I'm giving it two. Was it out of five?
Two out of five.
I'll give it two out of five.
Josh, what are you giving me?
I'd have to go with like a 2.5, 2.75. Like, I enjoyed it.
Ooh, that's a higher score than I expected.
It's perfectly fine. Like like there's nothing great about this movie. It's not horrible in any way.
Lukewarm.
Yeah, like this is the kind of thing where if we were back like 15 years ago when I had cable and I would be like scrolling through channels looking for something to watch and I caught like a second of this, I might stop on it and leave it on.
Yeah, I am going to give it a 1.5.
Oh, you really didn't like it.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I'm going to be very honest about it, is that I watched it very last minute, but I will say this. It couldn't hold my attention, but not could it not hold my attention. There's nothing visually that could have grabbed me. The performances, I would say, for the most part, are solid. They're solid performances. It just seems like this movie had a direction, but it just didn't know where it wanted to go. Or didn't know what it wanted to be, really, I should say. Like I said, I think it would have served a little bit better as a miniseries, maybe, like a Firestarter miniseries or something.
So Blumhouse, if you're listening, like a
Blumhouse,
hit us up.
Blumhouse television show, you know what I mean? Like, give us a Firestarter TV series, and then, you know, maybe people would have a different opinion. But I feel like they try to cram too much into an hour and a half. And mind you, Blumhouse films are known for being shorter, a little bit on the shorter side. And this, you could feel it in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how they do everything on a budget.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I completely understand where you're coming from with all of that. For
I will say this, though, and this is the redeeming quality of not me not just liking not liking a movie, not to like it, but I will say this, is that I want to rewatch this movie and really, really like sit there and pay very close attention, because I want to give it a fair shot. I want to say I didn't give it a fair shot.
I
want to give it a fair shot.
I mean, sometimes it's hard when you're like
doing stuff for work. I get it.
Multitasking, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But also another thing that I'd like to say as well is that if you are a fan of kind of like the Stephen King genre stuff, I would recommend checking out this movie. And also, if you're a fan of the original Firestarter, I would say don't check out this movie, because I think it's a very hard thing to live up to the original expectation. I don't think this lands the way that did.
I would definitely agree with that.
Do you guys think if it wasn't Blumhouse, right, under a different like production company, do you think they could have made it work?
I think Warner Brothers could have made this work. I think Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers has a weird history, though.
They do, but I think that for the most part, that's hard to say, right? You know who else could have done this? Lionsgate.
Lionsgate. I think would have been a good choice, but like Warner Brothers,
Legendary.
Like, Legendary is another way. If you look at Warner Brothers, like not just what's happening now with the DCEU stuff.
But about it. It was fantastic.
It was good. But then you look at like this going back a while now. But if you look at what happened with what was the movie? The Exorcist prequels. Sure. So I don't know.
I don't even really remember these
prequels. Yeah, so I don't know if you remember the story or not, but they shot the movie, completed it. Focus groups that they showed it to didn't like it. So they went back and they reshot the entire movie again.
Well, here's the thing. The real question comes down to this then, because I mean, at the end of the day, Blumhouse made the film, Universal was really the distributor. The real question is Keith Thomas. Is he the right person to have directed this movie?
Thomas wrote it.
Keith Thomas directed this film. Thomas directed this film.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing.
So Keith Thomas, do you think that he was the right choice?
No, it was. I saw Scott Teams was set to direct. Okay, I see what I'm looking at. Keith Thomas replaced Aiken.
Right.
So yeah.
Do you think that he was the right choice for this film?
Let me see what else he's done.
Well, the visual in 2019. He's known for mostly music videos, though.
Yeah.
This might be his feature directorial debut.
He did an episode of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. Mm. So that completely makes sense how he would have landed this.
Yeah. This isn't the worst horror film I saw this year.
Yeah.
I think the worst.
But that's even hard to call it a horror film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you were saying before, this feels a lot more like a sci-fi film with action elements.
Yeah. More than anything else, I feel like, you know what's interesting? Because I think the marketing should have been more superhero-y.
Yeah.
Superhero-y.
Kind of like Brightburn.
Yeah,
Josh. Actually,
Brightburn.
Brightburn is like a better version of this.
Brightburn. Matter of fact, I would love to see James Gunn direct Firestarter. How fantastic would that be?
That would have been really good.
Oh man, now we're just fantasy. Yes, we're playing fantasy studio head here at the Illuminati.
Yeah, on a movie that's already released.
we'll just reboot it again in 10 years. It'll be fine.
But honestly, I feel like, because look, if we're looking at kind of like telling a story through an allegory, I think nobody does it better than James Gunn. The Illuminati's out of history with James Gunn, but nobody does it better than James Gunn.
If you were to recast any of the roles in this film and that would make it better, who would it be?
Oh, honestly? So instead of Zac Efron, this is going to be weird, I would have cast John Krasinski.
John Krasinski?
Yeah.
You know who I would have cast, maybe? What the dude? If it's going to be like a Peacock exclusive, Sam from Supernatural.
Okay.
It could kind of serve to like, oh, Sam had a daughter, you know, kind of like, I feel like he could have done that role.
It's not bad. Yeah. Well, look, this is it. Firestarter, not the highest recommended movie from we're always watching. But if you're into Stephen King and if you're into Stephen King, check it out. If you're into the original Firestarter, I personally would say skip it. Josh says, throw it on if you have nothing else to do.
Yes.
And Jezzer recommends that you.
This is a rental for sure. This is a rental for sure.
Redbox Firestarter.
This is $1.99 on Amazon Prime, and maybe you wait till Black Friday when it's like 99 cents on Amazon Prime, or it's supposed to be on Peacock. This is definitely a
discount bin.
Yeah, I'll put it to you like this: if you're looking to subscribe to Peacock based on Firestarter, wait till something else. Yeah. That is our recommendation here at the Illuminati.
I think so far for me, like the thing that keeps me on Peacock is first off The Office, and then
for me it's wrestling.
Okay, wrestling, WWE. But also I really enjoy the Bel Air show. I really love that.
Oh
show.
Yes, Bel Air is fantastic.
I'm really disappointed that they canceled Saved by the Bell though.
Me and Kevin, who's on our next episode. We really like Bel Air as well, and we talk about the show quite often. But yes, I agree. Bel Air is a fantastic show on Peacock.
Peacock has a lot of good like old shows, and they have a lot of. I'm sure they're going to be coming out with a lot of good content. Like this is
Saved by the Bell got canceled though. Yeah. Saved by the Bell got canceled. Disappointed.
I like Mark Costler.
Yeah, you know what? He'd also been a decent dad in this. If this is going
to
be,
you need to listen. I know it's weird to like promote another podcast, but listen to him on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast. It's such a good episode. Such a good episode.
I gotta check that one out.
Like he talks about like his hesitancy to open up that door again. You know, so the Firestarter. It's a movie that you'll watch on a plane, you know, like it's
depending on what the other options are.
Yeah. He's like, I'm on a plane. I'll watch it, you know, but it's if you got Peacock, it's free. I mean, and if you love the original, maybe you'd be interested in it. But I don't know.
Go in with no expectations and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Like we said, it's more of a sci-fi film. Like it's push. It's the darker push. But
Well, that's going to do it for us at We're Always Watching, the official Illuminati movie podcast. We ask that you please give us a five-star review on iTunes.
And Spotify.
Please leave a comment, and we will gladly read your comments on our next episode. By the way,
you guys are going to enjoy the next episode for sure.
Are we?
Yeah, it is the Disney Plus exclusive Chippendale Rescue Rangers, which is amazing. So if you guys got to come check that out.
Well, yeah, come check that out. Kevin is going to be on that show along with Caitlin and Jezzer talking about Chippendale, the Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus. Guys, this has been a lot of fun talking about Firestarter and maybe not so much watching it. But Jezzer, where can everybody find you on social media?
You can find me on all social media at Jezzer Zeus. You can also find me on the Illuminati's TikTok and soon on Twitch also. So, yeah, they'll be coming soon.
And any Power Ranger fans out there, if you happen to be listening, check us out on the Ranger Wrap-Up. Yeah. Right on. Check out our YouTube channel where we're doing a ton of new content there. Josh, Captain Star Trek, where can we find you on social media? So
you can find me at Vogon Poetry Slam on both Twitter and Instagram. And on Saturdays, typically, you can find me on our Twitch channel with the Riker Maneuver where we discuss all the new Trek stuff.
I'm not even going to say typically anymore. You're going to find him every Saturday doing the Star Trek show. And if you like Star Trek just a little bit, I recommend you tune in. But if you don't, check it out anyway, because they're also going to talk about sci-fi mainly, and something maybe like Firestarter would be a topic of conversation they would talk about on this show. You'd maybe get a little deep dive on the shit that Josh likes. Something. What's one of your favorite shows, Josh?
Let's go with Stargate.
Stargate, something I've never seen, and maybe who knows? We're thinking about doing a retro show. Stargate may be a good place to start. So if you're into sci-fi, go and check out Josh's Riker Maneuver. It's not just Star Trek; it's all sci-fi. You can find me on all social media at Joe Luminerdy. You can find me with Jezzer Zeus on Saturdays for the Ranger Wrap-Up. And you can find me all around. So just check us out at the Illuminati. Please subscribe to our podcast if this isn't. This is your first time listening. And if you already are subscribed, thank you. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for us here at the Illuminati. Guys, till next time.